Hi, this is Marion Nessel. I'm the Paulette Goddard Professor of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at New York University and a longtime fan of Heritage Radio.
Like Marion, you too can support Heritage Radio Network, a member-based nonprofit radio station operating out of Bushwick, Brooklyn.
I've been on it countless times. I love being interviewed. The interviewers are always really well prepared and fun to talk to about the issues that matter to me the most, about how we can change our food system to one that's healthier for people and the environment. It's just invaluable to have an independent radio station that's dealing with these issues. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful asset.
Support Heritage Radio Network by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate.
The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew is proudly sponsored by Restaurant Owner App. Restaurant Owner App is a free app designed by a restaurateur for restaurateurs. Visit restaurantownerapp.com for more.
This is Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to The Front Burner with Jim and Andrew, where we serve a weekly menu of industry commentary based on what the market has to offer. I'm Andrew Friedman from Tokeland.com.
I'm Jimmy Bradley from The Red Cat.
And we are delighted here, are we not, Jimmy? We have our one of our favorite things. We have out-of-town hospitality industry.
Here we are in our train car with some out-of-town friends.
We are delighted to welcome here Benjamin and Max Goldberg. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Benjamin and Max are the co-owners of Strategic Hospitality. They've got nine... is restaurants probably not even necessarily the right term, is it? Nine entities, nine joints. What do you guys call them?
Nine places.
Jimmy would say stores. Jimmy would say stores.
I did. Well, you know, when you build it, you build this thing that's called a storefront, and that's what people see. So right. I always just thought the rest of it would be called the store.
Probably for our listeners, the most well-known one is the Catbird Sea, which, of course, is a tremendously important restaurant in Nashville where all of your businesses are. But also Paradise Park, Ariel, Merchants Restaurants, the Patterson House, and the latest venture is Bastion Restaurant, which is both a bar, which opened about 90 days ago, and a restaurant that opened about 3 weeks back. And that is a project that you guys have done in collaboration with Chef Josh Habiger. Correct me?
No, you're perfect.
Okay. Who was, of course, one of the original co-chefs of the Catbird Seat. So with that, you know, I guess what we'd love to do to just start is, and then we'll kind of back into everything else you guys do, but could you, take us through Bastion? What's your new place all about?
Yeah. So Bastion is really two different parts. One is a neighborhood bar, where we have an opportunity to serve some shots and some beers and some cocktails and punches and frozen drinks. And then the other side, which just recently opened, is a restaurant. That Josh is just back there cooking, just like he was at the Catbird Seat.
Yeah.
It's about five courses if you're really hungry, and it's a choose-your-own-adventure. So you sort of pick the direction you want to go, and it's a fun, laid-back, casual way to eat.
Is there – would you guys – I mean, obviously operating the number of places you have, what would you say for people who haven't been to Nashville or haven't been to Nashville in the last – I don't know, 8 or 9 years, what would you describe sort of the current Nashville vibe or style like in terms of restaurant, if there is such a thing in your opinion?
I mean, I think Nashville's booming right now. There's restaurant after restaurant after restaurant opening. Somebody told me just last year there were 56 restaurants that opened in a year, all small, independently owned restaurants,
yeah.
which for it's a city amazing. Of that size is just crazy.
Yeah.
And they run the gamut. I mean, I think that Max and I gravitate towards opening places where we want to go. There's no market research. There's nothing that says, oh, this seems like a great idea. It's literally just where we would want to go.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the restaurants themselves are just really talented people that are betting on themselves saying, I want to do this.
Yeah.
And Nashville is super supportive.
Right. Max, maybe you could talk for a minute about, again, your places run the gamut. You guys, for two people who are not chefs yourselves and not having met you before, like 10 minutes before we came on the air, you know, Jimmy and I were talking, there really seems to be a, like there would have to be from the way these places have come together, it seems very organically, some kind of simpatico or some kind of real natural ability that you two have to work with chefs. I mean, there seems to be a really strong food, really well-defined food at the different restaurants. You've definitely put the chefs front and center in some of your businesses. What is it about you that you feel enables you to work well with chefs in this collaborative way?
Well, if you look at our portfolio of restaurants, we're all over the place and they're all different, and they really represent where we were in that moment in our life.
Right.
And so it's a really genuine experience of a personal expression of what we were into. And our guiding principle has always been, would we be the first people to go there? Would we be the first people to want to support? And then we've really tried to align ourselves with like-minded people that really are the most talented folks that we can surround ourselves with, and then do everything we can to create the most positive, incredible working environment to achieve a common goal of exceeding the expectation of the guest.
Right. And what about as just restaurant goers yourself? I mean, where do you kind of fall? Like, what kind of places do you, I mean, other than your own, would you say these are the places that you, you know, would want to hang out? But, you know, it's a formative experience, you know, as you were growing up or spending time in other cities. What kind of places did you gravitate? Like, what are some favorite places of yours that maybe, you know, have influenced you as you started to get into the hospitality business?
Sure. From a top line perspective, I think I've always gravitated towards spaces where there's a warmth and a welcomeness and way more kind of hospitality, almost over service, and, you know, having world class food and drink, but having environments where they really create great vehicles of conversation, if you will. And so over the years, I think you know, the expression, you may not remember what people said or what they did, but how they made you feel.
Yeah.
That's been a guiding principle for us and kind of what we try to create in our spaces. And, you know, there are definitely great moments, you know, in the culinary quest to go out and see what's out there where we felt these great inspirations and these great times and these memories. I mean, even recently, I went to this incredible sushi restaurant, 15 East, and did this omakase tasting. And granted, we don't have a sushi restaurant. I just remember, you know, each bite of food in that moment and having this great experience, like that warmth and that feeling there is just something you take with you.
Right. What about the fact of, you know, Jimmy, last week we had our first married couple in here last week as guests. That was Suey and Ben from the Good Fork restaurant here.
We feel like we're married sometimes, so
well,
that's understandable.
But I was going to ask, what about, you know, the being siblings in this business? I mean, there have been over the years, historic siblings that have been in the business together. You know, the first thing I always think of is the Bromberg brothers, who created Blue Ribbon, which was a restaurant that definitely grew out of sort of a shared idea and a shared sensibility about the kind of food they both liked and the kind of food they grew up on. What's the sort of connection between you two? Is it sort of a seamless thing where you guys are almost like mind melded and you tend to kind of agree on everything, or is it more of a are you guys more distinct in terms of your taste and how you come at a new project and maybe kind of have to hash out different things?
We definitely have different styles of kind of how we approach the business and different styles of management. But what's beautiful about the relationship is we know how, you know, wonky relationships can go with family businesses. And we always made sure we protected the relationship as brothers more than anything. And, you know, there was a defining moment when we were opening up the Patterson House, our cocktail bar, where, you know, we're brothers. Of course, we're going to beat the hell out of each other in every sense of the word. And we got into a pretty serious argument. And the reaction to it is I went out and bought an antique pocket watch and engraved on it, "We're best friends, brothers, and business partners. Never let us forget that order." And I really think that was a moment where, and I hope you still have that pocket watch, by the way. But
I saw that in a pawn shop.
Well, you're laughing. Exactly. You're laughing, but you didn't say, "Of course I do."
I think I know where it is.
Yeah. I saw that in a pawn shop in Flagstaff, Arizona.
All right, I'm going to have to go pick that back up. But I think we're really protective of the relationship and brothers. And one thing that I think we have an ability about is the fact that, you know, I trust him more than, you know, almost anyone else in the world other than my wife at this point. And it's just having that trust in your partner and knowing, you know, they're always going to make the right choice, that you see things the same way. But we're so different that I think we challenge and push each other. And because we're brothers, even in times where I think we agree with each other, we like to push those buttons, if nothing else, just because that's kind of what brothers do. And at the end of the day, I think we get a better product for it.
If we agreed on everything, it would be pretty boring.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we sort of, I'm first of all disappointed to hear that his wife has surpassed me in the trust meter. I'm
going
to have to go back.
Equal, don't worry. Okay. It's all right.
She'll be disappointed to hear that.
I think that, you know, if we agreed on everything, it would be boring. I think the fact that we disagree and we push each other into different directions and different ways that they see things really allows us to sort of view the bigger picture.
But are you talking business or are you talking I was thinking more in terms of concept. Like, do you two tend to sort of see a new concept in the same way?
Sounds like it all melds together.
Something for us to actually do something, we both have to agree. And we both have to feel very, very passionate about what we're doing. But I think to get to that finish line to where we're like, you know what, we're sort of sick of talking about this. Let's just do it. It goes through many iterations of thought and conversations and disagreements on the exact direction. But once we hit that line, we are both committed to the exact same vision. So it's quite a long process. I mean, there's far more things that we don't do than we ever do.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of them just become things that we chat about, and then one of us loses interest or one of us isn't as passionate. The stuff that we actually activate and get to do are things that at that point we are both amped up and geared up and super excited and aligned on.
Right. One thing we do is we create this five senses document where we like to think, what are we going to feel, smell, look at in the spaces that we're working on? And it's fun creating those lists independently.
I love that.
And
yeah.
Then creating them together as brothers. And so it's kind of a melding of sorts there. But I mean, you know, we disagree all the time, and I think we're a better company for it. And I think that, you know, when we don't agree on things, a better product comes out of it.
Yeah,
and that document actually allows us to go back to it during disagreements later in the process.
Can I just ask, is that your own thing that you guys came up with?
Yeah, I think that started it.
I hate to give you credit for anything, but this was your idea. You did this.
I think that
I kind of love that.
I've
never heard that from anybody in like hundreds of interviews. I've never heard that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I do the pros and cons one.
Yeah.
So it's not so elaborate, but you put everything down on a piece of paper and you look at it.
Exactly.
You know, it's kind of cool being, half an old man and putting myself in business a long time ago when, you know, we were using pens and papers. I went back and I was in my storage unit and I found some of our original manager logs, you know, 1999, sure. 2000.
Yeah.
And just to see the written disagreements between my partner and I, just fascinating, you know, talking about this one thing. It'll be like a month straight in the book talking about this thing, and then it'll never be there again, which, you know, means we figured it out some way.
When we're working on a project, actually every project, I've done this for 13 years now, I always carry a Moleskine with me, a notebook.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's so funny is I was moving recently and I unpacked all of my Moleskines from ideas to projects and I started reading them.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to see what actually happened.
Oh, it's amazing.
And then what didn't happen and then what you're so thankful for did not happen.
Sure. I do the same thing. Well, I used to. I just used, you know, the electronic stuff these days. But Moleskine for every job up until maybe 2006. So, you know, we've talked about vision, we've talked about inspiration, you know, kind of internally and externally. I was kind of curious about, you know, places that you've worked, operators you've worked for, possible mentors, or, you know, operators that you might respect and know or not know and sit with for informational sessions. You know, can you elaborate on any of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the more broad answer to the question is I actually take everything from all the interactions I possibly can from anyone, not even in the restaurant business, to be honest. I find myself getting motivated by people that are willing to bet on themselves.
Sure.
And I think that oftentimes that's really what it comes down to is willing to bet on yourself. And then I want to learn their story.
Right.
What was that point where you said, I've got this idea, I've got this thing, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And that I love surrounding myself with people way smarter than me and learning from them and listening to them.
Right.
And just anything I can take, I want to take.
You know, but sometimes you have to make those opportunities too. You know, I mean, sometimes the opportunities present themselves, like, you know, perhaps somebody hires you or, you know, becomes a mentor of yours, but you know, sometimes as, you know, scrappy young individuals, you have a lot of ideas. And, you know, listen, first, it's fine to make all your own mistakes. But after you make a few, like, you know, I don't want to shorten my own learning curve here. So it was more of a thought like that. Do you share with other people besides yourself? I mean, in your family, your direct family, to, you know, solicit fulfillment of your ideas or different ways to do things or...
Without a doubt, both within our family, within the company. I mean, sure. Max mentioned earlier he wants to surround himself, and I do as well, with the most talented people we can.
Right.
And there's a level of trust there that we have to have that says, hey, what do you think of this? How can we do this? Is this smart? Is this not smart? Are we idiots? And actually listening
right.
to them, which I think is sometimes a tough thing to do.
Yeah, sure.
From a mentorship piece, I mean, you know, Danny Meyer has been a huge inspiration, I think, to so many of us. And I find myself rereading, you know, Setting the Table every year. We formed a great relationship with Rich Melman out of Let Us Entertain You. And as we've kind of developed our company, we reached out and said, hey, you really have been a leader. Is there any way we can just come and chat with you? And we went out and, you know, I thought we were going to get 30 minutes with him, and we ended up spending like 7 hours. And that was just a truly humbling experience.
And you'd never met before.
We had met a few years before when he was in Nashville, and, you know, his sons had become really great friends of ours. So it was one of those great moments in time that you got to sit with this guy and watch him work in his test kitchen and ask whatever questions you want.
That man is no joke. You know, Steve Hansen went out and, you know, kneeled at him 20 years ago and then built a company and sold it for $150 million. So. Yeah.
What's funny is this business is so brutal so often that almost anyone that you reach out to is willing to talk to you about stuff
because
they want to help.
For
it's
sure.
the most welcoming community.
When I was young, I did, you know, certain similar things, and I was just amazed that people would take my phone. You know, you don't know me. I know you. I want 10 minutes of your time, and they would, you know, pick up the phone and speak to you. So, you know, where I was going with this is back in 2007, when you're getting together and making it all happen, you know, I guess you moved back in 2005 and
Max moved back. 2007.
Did you know you wanted to do what you're doing? Not specifically the stores and the ideas, but did you know you wanted to have this kind of company, this you know, somewhat larger restaurant company with these, you know, totally diverse, different operations and concepts and things like that?
I wish I could say that the answer was yes to that. I think so. I opened up my first place when I was 23 in 2003. And with one of my best friends in the world, we just sort of did not want to get a real job. So we begged and groveled and raised money to open up a bar. And much to our mother's chagrin, people actually showed up and spent money. And what I felt then was a really interesting undercurrent of energy amongst younger people in the city that were super supportive of what we were doing at the time. And I sort of felt it, and I started thinking about it and noticing it, and then opened up a music venue next door to that, and that same energy was only building. And so I remember I called Max and basically begged him to come back to Nashville. And I said, look, I don't know what it is, but I feel something happening in the city. I feel like things are really interesting right now, and there are a lot of younger people with really interesting ideas doing really amazing things. And I sort of feel like if you move back to Nashville, we can open a place that we can be really proud of and that we can continue to grow this wave. And so the plan was never to sort of keep opening stuff. That's a byproduct of the fact that we absolutely love what we do and being really, really lucky and fortunate to be able to do it. But Max, I sort of bet on myself at 23. I had literally nothing to lose. Max picked up, left a job in New York, moved to Nashville, and bet on the fact that my hunch was going to be right, that maybe there was enough of an energy and a wave to sort of continue to grow. And I think once he got back to Nashville, he saw that it was a city that was definitely changing and growing and developing.
When you think about the type of company we wanted to be, and going back to that kind of mentorship question, I had a mentor early on. Like, I always believe you should be mentoring and have someone mentoring you and kind of have that balance. And there was a guy that I met who was really instrumental, still is part of my life. And he kind of taught me you can make decisions on two emotions, love or fear. And when you make a decision based on fear, it can be crippling. When you make it on love, usually you can get to the promised land, even if not, your heart was in the right place and you can push forward. And so as we've kind of grown our company, we've always thought, you know, not the first question being, well, we want to open something and monetize it. that's usually the last thing we ask. And we really run sophisticated financials and have systems in place, and we really take care of that responsibility. But our guiding principle has always been, what do we love? What are we into? What can we do to add value to the city that's been so great to us? And what can we do to really kind of continue to paint this incredible landscape that is Nashville? And where are we in that snapshot of a moment of our life? And, you know, I wish I could say that there was this very sophisticated business plan, and people say, well, what's 5 years look like? Well, we're not really sure what we're going to be into in 5 years, but here's what we've been to in the past, you know. And I think that the core principle for us is positively exceeding expectations in everything we do. And that's the foundational piece to it. And obsessing over the guest experience and being grateful for every single guest that comes in has been a huge foundational piece for us. And so whatever the future holds, we have some things that are kind of coming online soon. Our goal is to never lose sight of the fact that we are there to exceed the expectation of the guests. And really, hopefully, if someone's had a great day, help them celebrate. And if they've had a bad day, make it a little bit better.
How do you convey that to your team? What you just said, that hospitality piece.
You know,
that thing that, I mean, to some extent you can't, right? It's about hiring the right people who have that gene where they know how to care for people that way. But there's an awful lot, I think, that especially now as diners across the board are more sophisticated and, you know, in their own way more demanding and expect what you're describing. But also, because it's so competitive all over the place now, the competition for those employees who can do what you're describing is fierce.
Sure.
So how do you get that out of people, and how do you get it to be, you know, it seems to me like, you know, one of the real tricks of it is to have that kind of warmth and have everyone sort of hit all the marks you want them to hit, but not have them be robots about it.
Sure.
You know, to still have some personality. I mean, so how do you go about training people for that?
We fight for it every day. I mean, it's something, you know, the industry we're in is a race without a finish line, right? And
yeah.
So it's a full contact sport, and we're there as often as we can. But as we've grown, you know, as thoughtfully as we possibly can, we can't physically be in every single restaurant at every moment, even though, you know, we wish we could. And so for us, it's really a cultural thing where we try to, you know, we recognize that some people in the hospitality space, this is a transition into the next moment in their life. And for the people that want to be in hospitality with us for the rest of our career, we welcome it. For those people who want to go off and go to architecture school or become a lawyer, while we have them for this moment, we try to do everything we can to create the best working environment for them to be in and exceed their expectations. And the reputation we've really created is we will do everything we can to help in that next step. I mean, even recently, I got a call from a guy who we worked together 6 years ago, and he called and he said, hey, I'm applying to this. I put you down as a reference. The fact that, like, we're still on this guy's resume,
yeah,
in a completely different segment,
right,
really translates into the cultural piece, which I think gets to the guests. I mean, each month we choose a different philanthropy to work with. Benjamin's wife heads up that program, and we have the restaurants compete against each other, and we try to make a positive impact on the city. But it also really is a great bonding moment with the different restaurants, and it has nothing to do with food and drink, but everything about culture. And so if you go full circle with that, we hope that that translates from the people we work with to the guest. You know, we do a new hire meeting every month where every single person that we hire comes in, gets to hear the story between us. Our cell phones are posted in every business. We're there, we're present, we're active, and we constantly try to fight and communicate for that message. I mean, the only people I think Benjamin and I would have a really hard time working with are the ones that don't understand that we don't exist without the guests. And we're grateful, even if we're on a 3-hour wait, every single person that comes in, we're grateful for.
You know, and I think that one of the things that we do is we actually don't care about previous experience. We want to hire good people.
Yeah.
And we'll train them, and we'll take the time to train them. We'll take the time to teach them as much as we possibly can about everything that they want to learn. But when it comes down to hiring, if you have a resume or you don't have a resume, doesn't really matter to us.
Yeah.
We just want people that look at it in the same way that we do. And
there's a lot of that instinctual. It's a vibe.
For sure. And we also tell the story. I mean, the first place I opened with one of my best friends when we were 23, we went, I'll never forget, 19 minutes before anyone walked through the front door. And those 19 minutes were probably the most painful 19 minutes of my life. I went 2 years with everyone telling me I was an idiot and was going to fail.
Yeah.
So you go 2 years, you continuously believe in yourself. You open the doors and you fully expect in your naive brain that there are going to be people lined up waiting to get in. And then you sit there for 19 minutes, you're like, I can't believe that everybody was right and I'm a complete idiot.
Yeah.
And then people showed up. And if I can possibly get someone that's new to our team to understand what those 19 minutes of deathly fear felt like,
yeah,
then hopefully it'll be appreciative when we are in a wait and they understand that people did choose to spend their time, money, and made the effort to come to us. So that's the push every day.
Right. You know, I mean, I think you guys, that sounds fantastic. I want to get work for you. But we train a lot of people on the food, right? We train a lot of people on the beverages. We have quizzes and all, you know, you can't quiz somebody on hospitality. So, you know, some of it, from what I'm hearing, how you do it is, you know, you get in there and you do it with them. And there's a certain trickle down thing. You know, if the leadership's doing it, stands to reason everybody else is going to fall in line. And, you know, if you're actually meeting the people and telling your story, that's huge. You know, a lot of operators would refuse to do that, and some wouldn't have enough time to do it. But, you know, I always look at that 15, 20, 30 minutes that you spend with somebody. That's a direct connection that you have with that person. You know their name, you know where they're from. You've asked the questions. You've said to them, what do you want to know from me? And you've told your story. It's a pretty good place to start. You guys sound like you're killing it.
I mean, we work every day for it, for sure. I mean, there's part of it that is educational. We do train on food, right, and wine and cocktails. And they either will learn that or they won't, right? That's a pretty easy variable there to figure out whether they care enough to learn or they don't. But what I have found, and what I think Max has found in terms of the cultural side of it, is it's made up of a lot of small decisions,
yeah,
a lot of very individual decisions. The way that you talk to somebody on the phone, do you open the door for somebody? Are you dismissive of somebody? Do you care enough to listen to the whole problem and then react to it? And if we can overhear those conversations between manager or server or bartender, and we're like, wait, we wouldn't have handled it that way. Here's the way that we really hope you'll handle it.
Yeah.
And we can correct what seem like small things. They end up adding up to what we hope to be this cultural acceptance of, hey, we just want to make you happy.
Right.
And you to enjoy. And so that's, I think that's what we have found to be the most successful way to get the culture, is trying to correct those small little mistakes or praise the successes in that world.
Sure. And then, you know, hiring people that actually, you know, possess a desire to please people.
Exactly correct. If we could do that every time, this would be easier.
You know, we don't own a crystal ball, but yes.
But that's such a powerful thing. I mean, your reliance on every single employee that interacts with a customer is, I remember years ago when I used, before I was lucky enough to write for a living, I did some marketing and PR for Starbucks coffee. And I remember Howard Schultz, who made Starbucks what it is today, you know, training on a group of people and basically saying to them, you know, we can do everything we want to do out here at this facility in Seattle. Like, each one of you is going to interact with customers, you know, and how you do it is going to reflect on this company. You know, it's going to be their experience of this company. You personally are going to be that experience. You're going to be their experience.
Sure.
To me, it's just a frightening, you know,
that's going to freak some people.
Well, when you have, you know, when you have one restaurant or two, I could see feeling like maybe you could keep your arms around it, you know, and then beyond that, you get to a point of, you know, at some level, yeah, you do everything you can to train them, but at some level, there's this leap of faith, and that's trust. I mean, at some level, you got to trust that you've trained them right and that they can, you know, carry the ball.
And even with our hosts and hostesses, we look at them as almost like the director of first and last impressions, you know, and
yeah,
and having that, how can I help you, instead of what can I do to prevent something because we're scared of what'll happen. I mean,
yeah,
we really try to make sure that there's this cultural piece of, we're in the hospitality business. You know, we're here to take care of people, and we can never lose sight of that.
Yeah, it's so, you know, there are all these threads running through this conversation that, to me, you know, they go back. I'm, you know, like, not necessarily that you would have heard these things from these people, but, you know, talking about hiring, you know, Karen Waltuck, who ran the great restaurant Chanterelle with her chef husband David, you said to me once, you know, that she would hire people who had never worked in the restaurant business, and she said, I can teach them how to work a dining room. I can't teach smart.
Sure.
You know?
And we also find that, you know, like everyone else, we make mistakes and we have failures every single day. And when we create an environment where the staff we work with knows that they can come to us and say, hey, we messed this up, but what can we do to make it better? We find those are great learning experiences. And a lot of the times, it turns into a great experience, and we're able to win back that guest and use those to get better every single day. And so just creating that environment where they feel safe enough to come there and say, hey, we can learn from this. We find great success in it.
It's also a constant. I mean, we just about a month ago spent an entire week. We work with almost 500 people every single day across the entire company. And we did sessions 3 sessions for 5 days, and we made it mandatory for every single person that works with us to go to. And all we talked about was hospitality and caring about the guest. And it was a 3-hour session. It took 5 days of our lives. We spent 15 hours a day just talking to our staff, showing them videos on Starbucks and the person that helps create their customer service and why you should care.
Right.
You know, I mean, the sad part of the restaurant business is, quite frankly, almost everything we do, people can do by themselves for way cheaper than we sell it to them for.
Yeah.
So we have to maximize that. We've got to fill that gap with experience. And if you're not a good person and nice and thankful, that experience is probably going to suck.
Yeah.
And so what we want to do is we just always make it a common thread of every single discussion, how we can possibly endear ourselves to the guest.
Thank you for that. We are talking with Benjamin and Max Goldberg of Strategic Hospitality in Nashville, Tennessee, and we are going to take a quick break, and The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew will be right back.
Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew is proudly sponsored by Restaurant Owner App. Restaurant Owner App is a free app designed by a restaurateur for restaurateurs. Restaurant Owner App empowers you to organize your restaurant from the palm of your hand on any iPhone or Android device. Place orders, track orders, and customize supply lists to track the organization of your kitchen or storeroom. Accomplish electronically what you've been doing by hand for years. Restaurant Owner App also allows you to see orders placed by your employees, so you're always in the know. Create a personalized vendor database and review past orders at any time. It also features promotions and specials on goods and services for the hospitality trade. Visit restaurantownerapp.com for more information, or to download for free and start organizing your restaurant today, search for Restaurant Owner App in the Apple App Store or in Google Play for Android phones.
Welcome back to The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew. We're talking with Benjamin and Max Goldberg of Strategic Hospitality from Nashville, Tennessee, who recently opened the bar and restaurant Bastion and also have 8 other places in their portfolio or in their group. Gentlemen, I'd love to ask you, again, I'm at a bit of a disadvantage not having been to Nashville since I was a kid, so I've never been to your places. Jimmy's been to a few, but you know, in getting ready to do the show and looking over your site, the integration of decor, food, and then cocktails, the beverage program, seems to be such a, I mean, it's not a completely unique thing, but across as many different concepts that you guys have that run at different levels, you know, different price points, different levels of dining experience, this kind of thing. Can you just, Max, maybe you could start this off, but talk about how you go about integrating beverage and food. It seems to be a real seamless thing and also a really important thing.
We're really lucky that we have a guy who heads up our beverage program who, you know, not only is Benjamin's brother-in-law, but also has been with us, you know, since the Patterson House days. And is just one of the greatest, like, wealth of knowledge pieces for great cocktails. And selfishly, Benjamin and I just love a really great cocktail and almost look at cocktails as important as food. And so as we've kind of grown our company, we've always put a big focus on, you know, Matt Tocco and his program. And it's been fun watching, you know, more people get interested. And then when more people get interested, there's more thoughtful conversation. And it kind of just breeds upon itself where it continues to progress and that the information gets out there. And you know, they challenge each other and push each other. And so he's really been a key part of us really growing that cocktail program and never losing focus on the wine or the beer, but the cocktails and, you know, even the nerdy ice we try to do and everything else has really been spearheaded by a guy who's been with us for a long time.
Great. And how about, how do you go about, I guess, melding or coordinating, I don't know what word you would put to it, the beverage and food programs in individual restaurants so that, I mean, do the chef and your beverage director spend time together with you guys to sort of see how it's all going to gel, I guess is the word I would use?
Sure. I mean, I think that it's somewhat of an organic process in each restaurant where, you know, they kind of take on their own personality and they have their own kind of feeling to it. But it's really a collaboration where there are constant conversations. There's food that's put out there. There's beverages that are tasted. And it's just a constant dialogue. And it kind of goes back to Benjamin and I pushing each other and disagreeing and agreeing to get a better product. we try to have, you know, as many talented people involved in the conversation to help end up with what we think is a really dynamic offering.
Great. You were going to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think that part of it is it comes down to Max and I being able to properly explain what we want to do and then listen to what their viewpoints are of that. And so a lot of it goes back to the cheat we spoke about earlier, where we say, look, here's the essence of what we're looking to do. What are your thoughts on this? And then everyone sort of goes away for a while and we come back together. And before you know it, Matt's got some really interesting ideas for cocktails and how we can push the ball forward. And we've gone back and said, how can we do X, Y, and Z? And the chef will come back with ideas. And if someone's really passionate about it, we're going to make it work. And I think that's part of the process of being able to listen to what the goals are and then execute them. I think it all goes back to quite frankly, us and then being able to properly articulate the vision of each individual component of what's going on.
And when you first have these ideas, how do they sort of get defined for you? In other words, do you have, do you think of something that's kind of semi-fully formed, where you kind of get a pinch of like, this is what it's going to look like and feel like, and this is the, does it ever start with the name? You know, a lot of some, right? Neil Simon used to say the first thing he ever did when he was writing a new play was the title. You know, once he had the title, he kind of had it. You know, like he had the vibe and he kind of, you guys are smiling and nodding.
We're probably the exact opposite.
Yeah, me
the,
okay.
The naming is the most
brutal.
So
you're laughing at me, not with me.
It's just so brutal to name stuff. It's funny is, so our cocktail list, we always get comments from people like, how in the world do you name these cocktails? And the funny part of that thing is like in the very beginning, it was all based off of like eclectic, weird, unknown hip hop songs.
Great.
And they'd find lyrics, yeah. And that would be the placeholder. And we're like, why are they placeholders? Let's roll with these names.
Yeah.
One thing we do is we're kind of coming up with the spaces. I mean, going back to if we look at the interior design of it, for example, Benjamin and I will have collections of images or ideas or menus or, you know, different things that have kind of inspired us. And we'll put all of those together and we'll take them to our design team and say, hey, here's a huge hodgepodge of things that kind of relate to what we want to do. And then it's a collaborative process of them helping us kind of dial it in a little bit more.
So does the idea come first? Does the concept come first? Does the space come first? Does the space dictate the concept? Or is it just all the above or none of the above?
I think it really, we have an idea of what we want to do, and then we go out and find the spaces for it. I mean, typically we'll have the team assembled, we'll have the idea there, and then we'll go out and try to find the space. And we really gravitate towards, you know, older spaces with maybe a little bit more character for us and going in and putting our own touch on it. And our progression is always, we've gone to the wrong areas, right? Like we've always gone to areas that maybe were lesser known or not as sought after.
You can't get a pioneer title without working that way.
Exactly.
And so, well, it also kind of reminds me of the way you talked about hiring people, you know, like you don't necessarily go to the most logical, you know, or the most conventional way.
Right. But, you know,
of making
the
a
restaurant
choice.
Business and logical and conventional, you know, those words aren't often used.
We want to find the best spaces we can so that the financial piece to it, everything can be put towards the guest and the kitchen equipment and the design of the space. And so what's been funny for us is that we typically have gone to spaces where people are like, you guys are total idiots, that'll never work. And the one that stands out in my mind is Pinewood Social, which has been a really great successful project for us in every sense of the word, is in the Trolley Barns area, which, you know, 5 years ago was a great area, but not really that known. And we had the opportunity to go in there and open up this space. Now people are like, well, of course it was going to work. It's in the perfect area. We're like, well, where were you 5 years ago? You know, like we saw this, we saw the momentum and we really wanted to push on. And so having the opportunity to find those spaces and then kind of push on them has been really fun for us.
Just for our listeners, why don't you just, if you could just break, can you break that one restaurant down for us just so our listeners get a sense of another one of your places?
Sure.
And sort of what it's about and what that experience is.
Pinewood for us has been a really a fun project because it started off where it was really driven by Benjamin and I being in a hotel lobby and hanging out and working for 16 hours and having a great experience. And we looked at each other and we're like, man, this is awesome. Like we've got a really beautiful office. This is fantastic. But we find ourselves working in coffee shops or these third spaces. We should try to open something like this in Nashville. And so the basis for it was really a third space to cater to the creative class, but be welcoming to everyone. And then we said, well, if we're going to do this, we want to have the best coffee we can. So we partnered with Crema, which is this great coffee program that's across the street. And we said, well, if we're going to do, you know, great food, we want to work with Josh Habiger, who helped curate our food program. And then I think, you know, maybe Benjamin and I had a couple bourbons and came up with this crazy idea of, you know, pushing each other as brothers. And we said, well, let's do swimming pools. Yeah. And
we
and
need a foosball machine.
Exactly, right? Like, where do these things come from? And really, it was about creating a space that you can live, work, and play in. And the idea was really to extend people's stays and cater to different moments in your day and time. And so we open at 7 a.m.
Great.
It has a great breakfast crowd. You know, then we have a transition to lunch and then dinner. There's always creative people working, but you really see the space transition to different folks at different times of the day, but everyone feels welcome, and it's been a really fun place for us.
And part of the inspiration there was when I signed my first lease when I was 23, I was given a book called The Great Good Place, and it talks about third spaces, both in the U.S. or lack thereof in the U.S., and then also third spaces or third places in Europe.
Well, this is one of the Starbucks comes up again. This is like Howard Schultz's North Star.
By far the most famous in the U.S., I would say, of a third space. But, you know, the reality is a lot of people in the U.S. will leave their house, go to work. Come back to their house.
Yeah.
And that's the extent of 5 days of their week.
Yeah.
Howard Schultz, I think, is the prime example of, well, let's get that stop before they get to work.
Well, he went to Milan, which is about as big as Philadelphia, and had 1,500 espresso bars, and where people drop in, you know, multiple times a day. And
yep.
That was a valuable epiphany in more ways than one.
Exactly right. Yeah. And that's what we wanted to create with Pinewood. We really wanted to extend people's stay, where they would come in for breakfast and take a meeting and maybe stay for lunch, or take their lunch that turn into an afternoon coffee that turn into a happy hour cocktail. And they're like, why would we leave? Let's go play bocce. And so no normal restaurant wants to keep people there way longer than they ever thought they would spend. We wanted to take all the restaurant quote unquote metrics out of it.
And we really tried to create a space where the greatest joy for us in Pinewood is watching people who are working in the space. And you know, I'm sitting next to you and I make leather and I can't help but notice you're making boots. Well, we should work together on this. And, you know, it's a space where we have a guy who used to come in at 7 a.m. every day and leave at 2 p.m. and he was in startup mode. And after Benjamin and I had spent enough time there, like, hey, no offense, man, like in a friendly way, but slacking at 2 p.m. Why are you leaving? He was like, well, my laptop dies. And this is a guy who would come in and, you know, buy coffee or breakfast, but not a huge spend. But that was never our focus there. We put in an outlet for him and said, stay, keep working. And then he stayed till 5:30 or 6.
Did you need to put a little plaque?
We really should have. We didn't. You know, we might need to add that now that we bring it up.
See, we have something like this here, but it's called the Soho House, and you have to pay a lot of money to be a member there, and you can't just go there.
we definitely do not charge anything for people to come into Pinewood. Yeah. And watching companies grow out of that space and watching people meet and date.
Right.
You know, now get married as we've been open for a little bit has been, you know, just wildly fun.
I mean, I'm laughing, but that is true. The places that fit the mold of what these guys are talking about, Jimmy, it's exclusive here.
The only way to get it done, it doesn't happen here because everything is prohibitively expensive, rents and things like that. So I'm jealous of these other places. You know, I mean, we didn't even get into the agrarian aspect of where you live. You know, like, you got some great stuff down there and you can do lots of fun things that it's hard for us to even conceptualize doing in New York. So you're in a city, but you have all these other neat things. And then, you know, as being pioneers, you know, you're a pioneer, you're going to get the best business deal. You get a good business deal, you get a little wiggle room built into your concept. You know, in New York, it's a little front loaded, you know. There's a restaurant that went out of business after six months.
Low Life Restaurants.
Gets a New York Times review, which would mean you were packed for 2 years. You know, 5 years ago, that's what that used to mean. And that meant that since, you know, the 60s. And now, 6 months and out, you know, it's a lot in this town.
Before we run out of time, Ben, if you could, you guys are opening yet another place that's in the works. Can you run it down for us? What it's going to be and what people can look forward to there?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it comes down to, you know, as we partner with Josh at Bastion, we partnered with Julia and Allie at a restaurant we're going to open with them called Henrietta Red in Germantown. And we've actually known Julia. Max went to school with her since first grade. Our parents knew each other. And so we just wanted to partner with really talented people. Julia's a very, very talented chef. Allie is an extremely talented front of house person that understands what we look for in those types of people. And we find them to be extremely successful in talent. And so we love working with people like that. And so we partnered to open a restaurant in an up and coming part of the city. There's going to be, you know, Julia cooks what tends to be, I would say, lighter fare, wood burning oven, mm-hmm. raw bar, fish components, vegetable, produce heavy. But she has very technical cooking skills. And so it's going to be a very interesting balance between technical cooking skills, but also being a very comfortable place to grab a bite of food or drink in the bar.
And it's been fun watching, you know, Julia as a friend who spent a bunch of time with Thomas Keller at Per Se and really thriving there, and then coming back to Nashville and being one of our sous chefs when we opened up Pinewood, and then helping curate some food programs for some other restaurants. Being able to now open up her baby has really been fun for us to be able to do that together.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, the more you guys talk, the more you really seem to me. I mean, this is true of a lot of, you know, restaurant owners or operators, but you know, you really seem to function in sort of what I think of as like a producerial way. In other words, there may be times where you have a great idea in the shower and that becomes a movie, and there may be, you know, talent that you like working with, and you'll build projects around those people, you know, and kind of come up with the right frame for that, for that piece of art.
Without a doubt. I'm actually very happy you brought up thinking in the shower, because Max always makes fun of me because I do my best thinking in the shower. I get to clear my mind.
It takes like 2 hour showers. What are you going to do? You know, you got to come up with a reason for it.
That's one way to stay out of work.
I mean, I think we're also really lucky to be in Nashville in the time that we are, and have, you know, this incredible moment happening in the city that we're grateful to be a part of. And, you know, you're right. Like, we are able to do some things because we're in Nashville. I mean, we had this crazy, you know, bandbox at the minor league baseball park, which, you know, I hope this doesn't offend any viewers, but like, I'm not a diehard minor league baseball fan, but I love being at a baseball game.
I know.
I'm sorry. But
there goes our Bull Durham audio.
having the ability to open up a restaurant and bar in the baseball stadium and have a dynamic offering where we were able to work with our friends, we were our local butchers, bakers, farmers, bring that in and offer a little bit more of a dynamic experience. Having success in the first year, now we're opening up a 9-hole miniature golf course, each hole curated by a different artist. It has nothing to do with like food or drink, but it has everything to do with, you know, the experience and the fun of it, and watching the city get behind it and these artists collaborate and drop other projects to be a part of it has really been a joy for us.
Nashville is the most supportive city I've ever been in. I mean, one of the coolest things is if you open a restaurant in Nashville, you know people are going to go. And they're going to want to check it out. And for the most part, even if you make a mistake and you apologize and you try and make it right, they're going to come back a second time. They want you to succeed. They want you to do well, which is very different than a lot of cities. And so the fact that everyone now knows that that is the culture that underlies a lot of what's happening in Nashville, people are really willing to take risks. So there's so many people doing really special things right now.
Yeah.
We're just happy to be a part of it.
I mean, still to this day, even after our career together, people, hey, what are you doing next? Yeah, that's probably going to fail, but we'll come check it out. Right. And so having the ability for them to come and see it, and then hopefully have it stick around for a while, and I'm knocking on wood here, but you know, it's been great.
This has been great having you guys in. Thank you for joining us. We've been talking with Benjamin and Max Goldberg of Strategic Hospitality in Nashville, Tennessee. Their new restaurant and bar, Bastion, opened recently. Please visit it if you're in Nashville. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
We'd like to thank our engineer, David. Thank you, David. And, of course, our sponsor, Restaurant Owner App. Please visit their website and check out the app. And we're really excited that on next week's show, Jimmy, we have producer and one of the directors of Chef's Table, the Netflix series, David Gelb, also the director of the film Hero Dreams of Sushi.
It's gonna
and
be a good one.
We're going to binge watch between now and then and make
Speaking
sure.
Speaking of producerial.
We've seen all the episodes. That'll be next week. And with that, I'm Andrew Friedman.
I'm Jimmy Bradley.
Look forward to seeing you back here on The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.